Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. I am so excited about today's show. I've been talking for months and months about today's guest. But not only is he one of my favorite people in the world, he is one of the funniest people in the world, and certainly someone that has brought joy and energy in an entirely different way to Fortune 500 companies, to people, to relationships. And that's really when we talk about having an unlimited life, crossing those barriers, crossing those lines. How do you have ultimate freedom, ultimate success, live your visions, live your dreams? What are the tools? What are the techniques? What are the ways to make that happen? I cannot think of a better way than being able to have fun and joy and happiness and love and light and laughter. And so I was so excited that he's carved time out of his schedule to be with us. Our guest today is Matt Weinstein, and Matt is the nation's foremost authority on the use of fun and humor in team building. That is, I mean, to be the foremost authority of anything and then to be the foremost authority of fun is the greatest thing I could possibly imagine. He is called the Master of Playfulness by People Magazine, and he is America's Pied Piper of Play by the Houston Chronicle. Matt Weinstein's playful vision has been the subject of dozens of national newspaper articles, magazine features, and television appearances. He is the founder and the grand emperor of Playfair Incorporated, which is an international consulting firm based in Northern California. It's interesting, today I am in New York, and you may notice that my voice today is a bit sultry, and part of my voice I left in Los Angeles, and as I am flying, and it's so interesting, because I think that part of my voice today, I'm right down on Wall Street, and I'm right down just overlooking Ground Zero, and so much emotion is with me today, and realizing all of the joy and all of the love, and the city that came together with so much heart and so much intensity. And so when I think about Matt being on our, you know, show today and all that he's going to offer, I think it's a perfect time to have Matt here. He was elected to the Professional Speakers Hall of Fame by the National Speakers Association, and he was honored by Successful Meetings Magazine as one of the top 21 top speakers of the 21st century. Matt's television special, Funworks, The Power of Humor in the Workplace, was broadcast nationally on PBS. His book, Dogs Don't Bite, When a Growl Will Do, What a Dog Can Teach You About Living, is just one of the funniest, funniest books. And if you think about What a Dog Can Teach You About Living a Happy Life, if you think about your dog, you think about the joy and you think about the love, I just, it's such an incredible concept. And the fact that that he brought it to the forefront, that he brought it out for people to be able to enjoy, to understand, to appreciate, and to be able to equate to your own life is just phenomenal. It was the number 3 bestseller on the nationwide bestseller list, What CEOs Are Reading. And his latest book is Gently Down the Stream, which is 4 Unforgettable Keys to Success. So with all the voice that I have today, with all the love in my heart, and certainly all the enthusiasm and excitement for today's guest, I welcome Matt to the show. Matt, welcome to Unlimited Life.
Hey, thanks, Nicole. Actually, my dog Izzy is out here in my studio with me today, so when she gets excited and she starts barking, we'll know something fun is going on.
You know, I remember I saw one of the presentations that, you know, you've done, and you had pictures of your dog in these photographs, and just the joy. My tears were running down my face. It's fabulous.
Yeah. Well, I have kind of curly hair myself, and my dog is a poodle, so people always get a good laugh when they see the two of us together, because we definitely have given voice to that idea that dogs and their companions kind of do grow to look alike, and we look like twins walking down the street.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So I have to ask you, and it's so funny that I have this little beautiful voice today, which I'm so appreciate you sharing with me. But how did you get into, I mean, when somebody's a kid and they say, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a vet, I want to be an astronaut, at what point do you decide, I want to have fun?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I did kind of have to invent a field that didn't exist previously, especially the idea about how to have more fun at work, because, you know, the traditional wisdom has been that work is not supposed to be fun. That's why it's called work. So I was an actor in a children's theater company, actually, and, you know, the wonderful thing about children's theater is it doesn't take place just on stage, but it takes place in the audience, too. And really, for me, the best part of it was even the rehearsal, where we all played theater games together and we got bonded so closely together. And I kind of thought to myself, wouldn't it be fun to bring this kind of theatrical way of building community to people who don't consider themselves performers, people who are in the business world and are interested in being closer to each other and forming a team, but don't really see performance or performance skills as the way in. So my first client actually was the Philadelphia Bicentennial. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time at a wonderful place called the Games Preserve, which we can talk about a little bit later. And the Bicentennial said, look, we're in competition with New York and Philadelphia, and if we give you the area in front of the parkway, we can close it down for you for a little while, and can you do something fun? And we did these amazing, crazy games where there would be giant three-way tug-of-war. There would be like 100-foot tug-of-war ropes, but we'd have three teams playing at the same time. So if one team started winning, well, the other two teams would pull against them and bring them back. So these games took like 4 and 5 hours for anybody to win, and people would run in and join, and when they got too tired, they would leave and someone would take their place. And so it was a totally different model of how to play, and people kind of understood, oh, okay, even if I'm not a kid anymore, there's still ways for me to have fun.
That's just astonishing. I mean, I love the idea of first setting up a forum and an arena and a space to do that. And that when you talk about children's theater and you're talking about that it's not just taking place on a stage. I mean, one of the things when I first met you that I always thought about was that Shakespeare called them players, and that when we go to theater, we call them plays, and that in movies, they're called screenplays. And even children that are playing baseball, if they're not having fun, they take their ball in the bat and they go home.
Right.
So they could be a doctor, but the minute it stops being fun,
yeah,
they want to leave. And so I love the idea of play and creating play in our lives and in our relationships, and the fact that you're able to translate that. And so from that point, then how did you go ahead and say, okay, now we know there's interest, so how do we bring this to business? How do we bring this to people? I know you have a team program, you know, so it's just snowball, but when you look at a snowman, there's so much joy. When you look at snow angels, there's just, I mean, there's something about that idea that it just creates such lightness, such effortlessness. And I also know in one of the games that I play with you, we played rock, paper, scissors, and it was a different way of playing than I've ever played before. So how do you take games that other people know and change the rules to make them even more joyful than they were before?
Yeah. Well, the place I mentioned before where I got my start was a place called the Games Preserve, and I kind of apprenticed myself to a mad genius named Bernie DeCoven, who started the place, and we thought we had a brilliant idea. We were going to, well, first of all, we thought we had a brilliant name, the Games Preserve, because we're going to preserve games and play. And our subtitle was A Center for the Development of Adult Playfulness. But unfortunately, you know, nobody ever quite understood exactly what we were up to either. People kind of focused on that adult playfulness part of it, and they thought we were some kind of X-rated summer camp or else they heard Games Preserve and they figured, okay, we're going to see a rhinoceros. But we thought we had a great idea. We were going to take corporate executives, we're going to play childhood games with them, and they were going to kind of fall in love with each other, and it would be a revolution in team building. So we did a massive media blitz, and we got a lot of great articles written about what we were doing, and people did fly in from all over the country to study/play with us. And so we played like a typical childhood game with these people, and we'd have to spend like 5 minutes playing the game, 20 minutes calming them down, keeping them away from each other, because what we realized was childhood games are not about support and building community. As is age appropriate, they're about growing stronger, testing your limits, head-to-head competition, and you give adults a chance to play like that, and it is kind of the reign of terror immediately. So we realized we had a great kernel of an idea because the energy we released was so fantastic, and people were so excited. But we had to change the typical childhood win-lose experience into what we called a sink-or-swim experience, a game where your whole team wins or your whole team loses. But in the end, it doesn't matter if your goal is to bond people together. So we've had great success taking games like the one you mentioned, Rock, Paper, Scissors, that people know, and changing them so you're not competing to beat each other. For example, in Rock, Paper, Scissors, if the idea was you win when you put the same thing out, well, that creates a very different dynamic because you have to kind of tune into each other. And I think the game that you're remembering was one we played with about 100 people at once, and it kind of combines the best of both because if you lose, you don't get left out of the game. You become the cheerleader for the person that beat you, and all of a sudden that person has 15 or 20 people behind them cheering their name, and eventually half the room is cheering for one person, half the room is cheering for the other, and you get your ultimate champion at the end, but everybody feels like they participated and are a part of it.
And that's what I loved. I mean, I love the energy. I love the excitement. I love the enthusiasm. And it was a game that I knew, but that I never understood. Like, in that moment, it became a whole different game. And ever since that moment, I must have told thousands of people that I've met through the years about this incredible game and this incredible experience.
Well, all the other
times I played it as a child, I never went out and said to somebody, oh, my gosh, you know, I played Rock, Paper, Scissors when I was 7. But when I played it with you, it became an experience in my life that I wanted to share.
Yeah.
And that was different than anything I've ever had before.
Well, you know, the language of play is a language that almost everybody did speak as children, but as adults we don't get much of a chance to practice anymore, but it comes back right away. So that's what's great. Getting in front of a room of adults, the main thing that people need to understand is that serious and play can happen together. It's solemn that people think that they have to be when they grow up and go to work, and that it's very hard to be playful and solemn at the same time, but you don't have to be solemn. You can be serious about your work and full of joy and excitement and celebration, and that comes as a revelation to people. They realize, oh, yeah, if I'm having fun, it doesn't mean I'm goofing off. It means I'm regenerating. It means I'm bringing more energy in here. It means I'm bonding together with the people who share a kind of shared vision with me, and that's exactly what a successful business wants to have happen.
I love that. You know, my father is hysterical. My father is one of the funniest people I've ever met.
Uh-huh.
And as I go through my childhood, I learned so much. And I'm still learning so much from my father. He's still one of my heroes and my mentors. But so much of what I've learned, I remember because I would be laughing through it. He would be teaching me something, and I would have tears rolling down my eyes laughing, but the moments I've never forgotten. And
that's so great.
You know, so I love that experience, and I love that you could take a 100-foot rope or get people involved. And so how does a company know that they need you? How does somebody say, you know what, we really need to shake things up, fix things here, we're going in the same direction, we're going downhill, we're going sideways, we're banging into each other, and we really need something to shift that, to change that, and this is what I think would work, is for us to actually let go, release, have fun, learn who we are without these constraints. And so how does someone find you, and how does somebody know that this is the right direction for their company or their business or their life?
Well, I think people look for, when they come to our website, we have two of them actually that are really popular. One is playfair.com, P-L-A-Y-F-A-I-R, and the other is my name, MattWeinsteinTeam.com. And, you know, what people are searching for they don't usually search for fun, although sometimes they do, but they search for team building or they search for reducing stress. You know, it's the end benefit they look for. And what's so great now is that many organizations want to bring some joy and celebration and reward and recognition to their people. And they understand that stress reduction is not going to happen and team building is not going to happen unless people are excited to be there, if they're passionate about answering the phone, if they feel good about the organization. And what happens in one of our sessions is people come out of it thinking like, wow, I just got a real gift from my organization just by being able to participate in this. So that's why, you know, our popularity has skyrocketed, because I think the times have finally caught up with us. And you know, business people really understand now that just pushing and pushing and pushing your people, you're going to burn out your best people like that. Instead, it costs a lot less money, really, to make your people feel like they're appreciated, make them feel like they want to be there. And then that's what's going to happen. You retain and keep them in the organization instead of going out and constantly having turnover and having to audition and find new people for your company. It costs a lot less money to work with the people who are there and make them feel like they're a significant part of the organization.
When you're saying this, I so understand it and I so love this concept. And I also can tell you that I've had the opportunity to work with so many companies that, you know, work with corporations, and I've never seen anybody have the results that you have as far as team building and communication and being able to create, you know, shared values and virtues and spirit and vision and direction.
Yeah.
And so it's absolutely astonishing the work you do and how you do it and how quickly you do it and how easily, and it's almost seamless when you're working with these people to see the shift and change and how close they become in such a short period of time.
Yeah. Well, part of it is when you laugh together, when you play together, when you enjoy together, what you're saying kind of subconsciously is, I share the same values as you. I feel safe with you. I feel connected to you. And that's a result that everyone wants to have, because we don't want to go through life alone. We want to go through life supported. We want to go through life feeling safe, feeling like there's a context for our own lives that's bigger than ourselves. And play, as I mentioned before, is a common language that's so underutilized. Everyone responds instantly to it. And if you can learn something with joy rather than learn something with pain, why not learn it with joy?
That's such a great concept. Now, I know that you wrote a book, too, and we were talking about your dog and the things that dogs can teach you, and I have two little munchkin dogs. I have a dog that's 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and I have a dog that's just under 5 pounds that the vet told me needs to go on a diet, which I think is so funny since she's just barely 5 pounds. How does a dog that's not yet 5 pounds go on a diet?
But, yeah, right.
So, I mean, and their personalities are hysterical. And so how did you come up with the concept for your book, which I absolutely love? And then, you know, is it something that can help anybody? Can anybody pick up this book and really get these tools and techniques to have more fun in their life?
Absolutely. I mean, the great thing is when people look around for role models of how can I learn to play more in my life, if you have a dog in your family, you don't have to look any farther than that. Dogs are always ready to play. And, you know, we don't think of them as teachers because we have these crazy ideas in our culture. Like, how many times have you heard somebody say, oh, man, I've been working like a dog and my boss is working me like a dog? But the question is, do you ever take a moment to notice how your dog does spend his day? I mean, it would be your lucky day if you could be working like your dog. And the main thing is, dogs don't seem to know the difference between work and play, because everything looks new and fresh and exciting and like they're seeing it for the first time. I mean, you come home from a hard day at work, as soon as you open the front door, your dog is there in a flash, eyes bright, tail wagging, every fiber of its being is going like, I can't believe you came home. This is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. But 15 minutes later, you go out the front door to take out the garbage, you come back in the front door, your dog is still really excited to be with you. So our question was, wouldn't it be great if you could walk into work first thing in the morning and the people you work with would be that excited to be with you? And that's the premise of the two dog books that my writing partner Luke Barber and I wrote together. The first one was called Work Like Your Dog, and the second one was, which actually did even better in terms of sales, was called Dogs Don't Bite When a Growl Will Do, which is actually another really good lesson. You know, you don't have to go nuclear option. You don't have to go all the way. There's lots of things you can learn from your dog. Now, of course, I do always make the proviso that when I say you should work like your dog, I am talking metaphorically. I'm not saying that anything a dog does is okay for you to do on the job. So you do take the metaphor with a grain of salt. But the kind of enthusiasm that your dog approaches life with, and their ability to forgive and forget and to inspire other people with their joy and excitement, those are the kind of principles you want to do when working with your coworkers.
It's such a great concept. Where does everybody get this book? Because I know the people that are listening to the show, it's perfect. It's Christmas. This is like the best talking stuff you possibly can get. And, you know, and I know how funny it is. But it's just such a brilliant concept. So do they go to your website or do they go to Amazon to get it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Yeah. That's the easiest way to get it, to get either of them.
I just love it. And then when you're working with companies, do you work with little companies too, or just with big companies, or if you're like a mom and pop shop, or if you're a family-owned business, do the concepts work the same way?
Oh, yeah. We work with all size businesses. You know, sometimes in a smaller company, we'll get to work with the entire company at once. In a larger one, of course, we work division by division. I mean, we've worked with audiences as big as 5,000 people at a time. So, and we've done, quite small ones as well. So, it's just a question of tweaking the material and, you know, looking at the different kind of setup. There's certain things you can do with 20 people that you can't do with 5,000 people, but it works the other way around too.
I love it. It's so great. And then when you started and you were working with the game company, which I love the idea of what people thought it was and the perceptions, and then how did you jump from there to Playfair and creating this empire of playfulness? I mean, it's such a ladder of success to go from happiness to joy to ecstasy to bliss to creating fun for everybody. I mean, I can't imagine a better ladder to be climbing.
That's very true. Well, there was a wonderful conference that started up actually in the late 80s that was called The Healing Powers of Laughter and Play. And it was a conference mostly for medical professionals. Doctors and nurses were in the audience, and they had a lot of people who could talk about laughter. In fact, Norman Cousins, who wrote the wonderful book Anatomy of an Illness as Perceived by the Patient, he was one of the speakers on that conference, and he himself had a very debilitating nerve disease and checked himself out of the hospital, and with his doctor's permission, he checked himself into a hotel room and rented Candid Camera reruns and Marx Brothers movies and literally laughed his way back to health and wrote about that very passionately. And later, actually, he got research grants, I believe it was UCLA, to study endorphins, the body's natural painkillers. And then also on that panel, there was a fantastic panel with Sid Caesar, the comedian, and Steve Allen, the comedian, and their sons, Rick and Steve Jr., who were both physicians. And it was called Healing Entertainers and Entertaining Healers. But they didn't have anybody to talk about play, so they found me, and that was actually my first time talking to an audience of people in their seats. Up until then, I'd just, you know, been working out in fields and stadiums, but on not in the seats, out on the field. And people really resonated with this idea of bringing a playful vision to the workplace. And there were a lot of corporate wellness people in the audience. And from there, you know, the corporate side of Playfair really took off. A lot of companies saw the value and also saw that people were having so much fun in our sessions that I think the content was less important than the experience. And they thought, you know, we need our people to laugh and play and just come out of there feeling good about themselves. So that's kind of how the corporate side of Playfair got launched. You know, I think you also know, Nicole, that we work with colleges and universities.
Yes, that was actually my next question, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, on the first day of school, they give us their freshman class, all their new students, and we do a giant icebreaker, mixer, team-building event. And, you know, if you think about it for a moment, that is the perfect audience because they're still somewhat in touch with their playful natures, and yet for most of them, it's their first time away from home. They're feeling really, really scared. Maybe in high school they were a big fish, but how are they going to do in college? And what we do is use laughter, play, and fun as a technology to calm them down, to bond them together, to give them, you know, I mean, some people are good dancers, some people are not good dancers. If you just say to them, okay, we're having a dance tonight, well, the people who are good dancers are going to show up, but the people who are not, you're never going to meet them. So instead, we'll do a dance where you're actually linked up back-to-back with your partner and you can't even see them. And so we'll come up with dances that no one has seen before and that everybody can do equally. And so that's been spectacularly successful. We did, I think our ending number was 402 or 403 college programs this year. You know, most of them happen, of course, in August and September, but some of them happen in the spring as well.
That's amazing. Wow, what a gift for these kids. What a magical, magical way to enter a university, especially if you're scared and you don't know anybody. What a way to meet people, and through laughter and through joy and through bursts of enthusiasm and silliness and craziness and insanity and letting yourself go and be free and not having anybody judge you or care, or everybody being able to allow themselves, you know, just to say, okay, we're finally out of school and we're, you know, into our adulthood and we're into this new stage of our life, and this is a great way to explore and explode and experience and let go of the past and release the past and allow the future to flow in. I mean, what an amazing way to do it. I think it's brilliant.
Oh, that is so true. And, you know, you can sense the difference. I mean, if you're there in the first 10 minutes and you just see how frightened, and then if you're there in the last 10 minutes and they're carrying each other around their shoulders and they're just going insane. And, I mean, you know what it's like facilitating a group that's having fun. There were times this last season where I was just grinning ear to ear and thinking like, this is such a special gift for me that they are giving me to get to work with people who are ready to just let themselves go and be uninhibited and just create this sacred receptacle of so much joy. It was just amazing, just amazing.
I love that. And then you also have summer programs, don't you, that you do?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one really interesting program. There's a prison in Houston, Texas. It's actually in Cleveland, right outside of Houston, that does a program called the Prison Entrepreneurs Program. And to get into this program, you have to have less than 3 years left on your sentence. And you have to want to start a business when you leave. And people transfer in from a lot of different prisons in Texas to be a part of this. And we're kind of work with them as volunteer faculty, and I was actually just there last week. It's very fresh in my mind. To bring a sense of play and joy to people who are incarcerated is really even another level. And the things that the inmates said, like, you know, I walk through my life completely armored, and this is the first time I could let go of my kind of macho image and just relate with so much love with my brothers. And, you know, I haven't had a day filled with this much joy since before I came to prison, and just amazing, amazing things. And you know what was beautiful? There was no resistance in that room. They were just ready to play. It was amazing, amazing.
Wow.
To just see the heights that they were. Well, you know, I mean, it makes sense if you think of it. I mean, they're so kind of held down in their lives that to be able to let loose is just very amazing. I remember, I know this is a crazy kind of analogy to make, but I once went on a cruise with all the partners of PricewaterhouseCoopers, and when we got off that cruise, one of my friends said to me, oh, that must have been horrible, right? And I said, no. The accountants just let themselves go wild. And I think it's a similar thing. Usually you would think accountants aren't allowed to show that side of themselves, but they're human beings. It's not like they don't have it. Of course they have it. They're ready to let loose if they are given permission to do so, and they're given an atmosphere where it makes sense. Where there's a rationale for it. Yeah.
And I love when you're talking about the prisoners. I was also thinking about a lot of people that we have that are incarcerated in today's world, you know, came from a background or a family life or from a community where there was hopelessness or helplessness, or they felt trapped, or there was no way out, or there was, and so sunshine, light, fun, joy, that wasn't their daily dose of, you know, happy breakfast cereal and, you know, crackling things and, you know, that make sounds and dance and, you know, it was, you know, anger or sadness or pain was their daily dose of life. And so to now not only, you know, be somewhere where, you know, they're getting help or they're, you know, getting psychology or they're getting somebody saying you're worth something or whatever that is, but to actually be able to laugh and to actually be able to have fun and to be able to understand that there is a light and there is another side and there is this thing called joy and happiness and hope and peace and community, and the fact that you bring that to these people, I think, oh my gosh, what an incredible experience.
That's well, you know, it's amazing. Our natural human state. I really believe that, to celebrate and have joy. And yeah, of course, we get caught up in all kinds of difficulties and distresses, and we can't get back in touch with that, but it's not like it's not there. It's always accessible. It's always available. It really is. I was just talking with my wife Janine the other day about we went to study with Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist Zen master in France, and he gave this one lecture that we were talking about the other day. He got up in front of us and he said, "Okay, who here has a toothache right now?" And nobody raised their hand, and Thich Nhat Hanh goes, "Isn't that fantastic? Nobody here has a toothache. Shouldn't we be celebrating that? But is anybody celebrating that?" And everybody kind of, you know, shakes their hands no, and he says, "In fact, when's the only time you pretty much think about a toothache?" And one guy raises his hand and goes like, "When I have one?" And he goes, "Exactly. And then it's too late to celebrate." So Thich Nhat Hanh said, I want you to start every morning here with what I call the non-toothache meditation. He said, every day I want you to get up, I want you to look in the mirror, and I want you to ask yourself the following question: what's not wrong in my life right now? What's not wrong in my life right now? And that is such a powerful question, because yes, there are plenty of things that go wrong, and most of us are taught to focus on what's not going right, but to take some time to focus on what's not wrong in my life right now, what's happening, what's the joy in my life, that can be such a powerful, powerful experience. And I know during some of the difficult personal times I've been through, to remember to do that, and that has been a practice that Janine and I definitely need to remind each other to do, it's been a huge help to me, a huge help, and so simple.
Well, you know, when you're talking about your wife, Janine, I wanted to ask you about that as well. So do you translate all of this information into your personal relationship as far as having fun in your marriage or in your family life, or how does that work? Because I imagine being married to you must be a kick.
Yeah, well, you know, It does translate in terms of we're all, you know, we're always ready to have a laugh together. And I know that a lot of times you ask women what they're looking for in men, and I think you ask men what they're looking for in women too, and they say someone who can make me laugh. But I think what people are saying by that is someone who can open me to that kind of joy that I want to reside in. And if you're with somebody where that circulation happens between the two of you, that kind of joy and love arises, well, of course you're going to want to be with someone like that who feeds that side of you. Mm-hmm. I tell you a story not about Janine, but with Susan, who is a woman I was with before Janine, and we were having just one of those daggers coming from your eyes kind of arguments. And, you know, I was just telling her what was wrong with her, and she was telling me what was wrong with me, and we were just escalating. It was your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. And I don't know what got into me, but this was happening in the kitchen of our house, and I noticed a an open box of eggs on the counter, and I just grabbed one of the eggs out and I smashed it on my own head just in the middle of the whole thing. And as soon as that like egg yolk started dripping down my face, both of us just completely cracked up. All the energy went out of the argument, and you know, she just picked up a little towel and started mopping me off. And it was so beautiful to find kind of the power and the unexpected power of a playful gesture, even in the middle of a difficult argument, to kind of bring us back to the place of love that we live in. Because I really do think that the act of play is an act of love. In fact, you know what? Let me tell a story not about my marriage, but about a close friend of mine. Who really, I think, he lives that. In fact, I've mentioned him in passing before. This is Luke Barber, who is also my writing partner. And Luke lives in Dallas, and I live in Northern California. So we don't get to see each other that often. But since I make my living giving talks mostly to organizations, I do fly through Dallas quite a bit. And one time I was on my way to New Orleans to give a talk, and I had a 90-minute layover in Dallas, and I called Luke on the phone. I said, Luke, I'm going to be, you know, in the airport for an hour and a half. You come out and meet me. I'll treat you to dinner. So we were really excited to see each other. And unfortunately, my plane is delayed for about an hour in San Francisco. So I come running off the plane, and Luke is there, and we give each other a big hug, and I say, oh, man, you know, I'm so sorry about the plane being late. Why don't you just walk me over to my next plane, and at least we'll have a little time together? And he says to me, I'm very invested in having dinner with you tonight. I say to him, what are you talking about? There's no way we're going to have dinner together unless you're planning to come to New Orleans. He says, trust me, I got this scoped out. And he grabs my carry-on bag, and he goes out through the security, and I'm running after him. And we start going down into the parking garage, and I'm saying to him, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way we're going to get in his car, drive someplace, have dinner, and get back in time for me to make my plane. But then I think, okay, this guy is one of your best friends in the world. He is kind of a master of stress-free behavior. Obviously, he's got this handled, so just let him take care of you. And so I trotted along behind him when we came to the place where his car is parked. And in the next stall over, he has set up a folding bridge table, and he goes into his car, and he pulls out folding chairs, he pulls out a tablecloth, he takes out candles, he takes out wine, he takes out hors d'oeuvres.
Oh,
we are sitting there toasting each other, you know, carbon monoxide fumes all around us. People are driving by like they can't believe what they're seeing. So with like about 10 minutes to go, he packs everything back in his car, we breeze through security, we get back to my old gate, American Gate 23, What he has not scoped out is that my flight to New Orleans is leaving from American Gate 31, which is in the other terminal. So there's no way
I'm
going
to
take that plane. It's like, oh, we almost made it. But then he flags down one of those guys with the electric carts, and we get on the back of the cart, and we tell this guy, we got to make it to number 31. And this guy is driving like a Grand Prix racer. You know, he's ducking in and out of people. Go, come on, and we're cheering him on. We get to there with, like, I don't know, 45 seconds to spare. The thing is totally deserted except for this one flight attendant. She kind of grabs me and says to me, where have you been? Get on this plane. And they close the door behind me. I sink into my seat with this huge smile on my face thinking, you know, why choose stress? Always go for the path of fun.
Oh,
but then I realized this thing happened so fast, I didn't even get a chance to thank him. So as soon as the plane landed, I whipped out my cell phone. I call Luke. I say, I really want to thank you. That was such a beautiful thing you did for me. And he says to me, you don't need to thank me. Somebody already beat you to it. I said, what do you mean? He says, when I got back to my car, there was a flower on the windshield and a little note with it saying, anybody who could do something like that for another person must be a beautiful human being. So,
oh.
I know. Well, you know what? Everybody has that reaction. Oh, in fact, I told that story in a conference one time, and a woman in the audience jumped up and said, please, tell me he's still single. Which is
great.
He's not. But you know, I was curious, why should she, like, have these romantic feelings after the end of this story? And I think the reason is really clear, that an act of play is an act of love. And the time we're the most playful is when our hearts are the most open. And it works both ways. When you kind of are in a loving space, you're going to find ways to be playful. And when you're in a playful space, it's going to open you to love. So do I think play is important in relationships? I think it's essential.
Oh, I mean, that was the best story, Max, and the best answer. I mean, truly, and what a loving gesture. And I can just imagine people driving by and seeing the table and you there toasting in the parking lot. I mean, it's just, and the fact that you were able to trust, too, which I think is, you know, that's part of allowing ourselves to have fun and to trust and to be able to play and not think that we look silly or crazy or that what other people think about us, but to actually be in that moment and to be able to have fun. And, you know, I think that when you're talking about your dog, like, I know that my dogs will lay in the funniest positions and make the silliest faces, and they look just so beautiful. There's just such joy in the innocence. Or the same as that kid's video, there's something in that curiosity and innocence that is just so perfect, tender, and so exciting.
You know, if we're not
at the same time.
If we're not too busy and caught up in our own little world, once we take a look at the child or the dog, our heart kind of opens and our heart kind of melts, and that's exactly the space that calls to us and beckons to us. And it's just so great to be in there. I know. Well, I'm looking over at Izzy. She's actually, she did look up at me right now. But she was kind of napping on the floor. But, you know, when she gets up and starts doing some crazy thing, except when she starts actually, you know, that old excuse, the dog ate my homework. I always used to think that was a ridiculous excuse that kids gave. But there have been times when I turn my back on her and some document I've been working on is half in shreds.
That's
then it's
funny.
Quite not so much fun. But, you know, even then it's like, okay, where is that stick I should have given her or that bone? And so she's just doing a little chewing. It's all right.
That's funny. And then I was asking you at the top of the show about at what point do you decide to choose play as a career? And so how did people come work with you? How did they come work with Playfair? How did they come work with these college students and with the
kids?
I think it's such a great career choice to teach people how to have fun.
Well, we have, I would say that probably 85% of the people on our staff are recommended by other people who are already on board. And, you know, I mean, we do some open auditions sometimes, and I myself never hire anybody who I don't feel like I want to live the next, you know, if I want to, like, spend the next 10 years with this person, because people stay with our organization for a long, long time. And if I feel like this is this somebody I can really enjoy being with, this is somebody who can really add something to my life, well, that's as important as can they get up and do, well, you know, in the college show, we do call it a show because it's really like a performance. You have to be able to command the attention of hundreds and sometimes thousands of the new students. So a lot of the people do have theater, do have acting backgrounds, and actually a number of our Playfair people have continued to do shows even after their acting careers have taken off. I just was looking yesterday, Bjorn Dupati, who's one of our guys, is on this new show called Alpha Dogs with John Goodman. He plays John Goodman's assistant, that's shown only on Amazon, but it was released yesterday, so I was watching Bjorn and feeling really excited about seeing him. And Benito Martinez, who is one of our people, was the police captain on The Shield, and he continued doing that. Steve Rosen was in the original cast of Spamalot on Broadway, and he
wow.
still had Mondays. He had Mondays dark, and he said to me, "If you have any Playfairs on Monday in the New York City area, I want to do them." He said, "Because it's a very different muscle than even being on Broadway." He said, "It's just a different way to express myself and a different way to have fun." So, a lot of our people are well, they're really good, and so of course they're getting work. In fact, you know, it was really fun. I was going out to supervise some of the Playfair trainers, and I was waiting to see Mark Gessner do a show at, where was I? I think it was Susquehanna University in Pennsylvania, and I got to the hotel a couple of hours before him, and so this was this last summer, so I was watching Orange is the New Black, which I really enjoyed on Netflix, and as I'm watching Orange is the New Black, Mark himself showed up on the episode that I was watching as I was waiting for him to show up in person. I had no idea he was in that show.
Oh, that's so great. That's funny.
So fun.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the people in our company are just multi-talented, and especially the ones who work in our college division, which has a very short season, really. It's only about 3 weeks long, and fortunately, it's after pilot season, and so almost everybody's free then, which is really great. Yeah.
I love that. I mean,
yeah.
I think just what you're doing and the steps that you take and the outreach is amazing. And then now you know there are people listening to this show from all over the world. We have so many countries listening. And I'm always amazed the letters that we get and the notes and as people are
yeah.
typing to me as I'm talking to you. And I'm seeing people are in South Africa, they're in Malta, they're in France, wherever they are, that they're asking me questions about you and how they get involved. And so do you work internationally, and can people work with you on Skype and all these questions that are coming in right now? How do people work with you? And
That's great. Yeah, we do work internationally. One of our there's one person in the U.S. and one person in Canada who both travel internationally for us. I mean, I've done it in the past, but I don't do it personally so much anymore. But, you know, the other people on our staff are so great. I remember once someone wrote asking for me to do a program, and I couldn't do it, and so we sent Fran Solomon, who at that time had the title in our company of Senior Vice Empress, because we're all royal in our company. My own business card says Emperor, so I'm never outranked at any meetings. And then she did such a great job that the client called back and said, "Oh, we'd like to have Fran back again next year, and if she can't make it, we'll take Matt." And I thought, ah, this is the greatest compliment of all time. They'll take Matt. They don't need to have me, you know, because so we're not actively recruiting new staff members at the moment. But, you know, people should get in touch. They can go to playfair.com and write to me. And we'll just try to figure out ways to network.
I love that. It's just it's so exciting to see people popping up, just so curious and so interested in what you do and how you do it. And I just, I mean, for me, I cannot imagine a better career choice. It's like when you say, okay, I want to, you know, what do I want to be and what do I want to do? And the fact that I want to bring people joy. I want to make people laugh. I want to be able to help teams, build teams, bring people together. It's just such a beautiful concept of life, and you do it so well. And, you know, I've been talking about you for weeks, and I know that you're traveling and you don't get a chance to listen to these shows. We've had scientists and, you know, new medicine and new technology and holistic healing and energy healing, and every week I've been telling people that you're coming on and how much fun you are and how much I love you and all of that.
Oh, and thanks so much.
Oh, honestly, Matt, but when you're on stage, I have, I mean, literally days after I see you, my ribs hurt, you know, the same way that something works out, and I'm always, like, from laughing so hard. I still have, like, these bitter little ribs from laughing so hard. There's so much effervescence and so much joy, and I laugh in a different way when you're on stage because there are things inside of me that I didn't even know existed. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, when I watch little kids in an elevator and they push all the buttons, I always think the kids are not trying to be annoying, that they're pushing all the buttons because they want to see how it works. There's a curiosity and they want to see how it works. And I feel like you push all these buttons and I figure out how things work inside me. Like, I didn't even know I had those little parts of me until you say something or do something, and then all of a sudden I'm just bubbling with laughter, and I don't even know why or what happened in that moment. I can't stop.
That's great. Well, yeah, you know, I think our kind of style is always completely interactive, and, you know, I don't want to go up and be like a comedian where someone is going to say, oh, Matt is so funny. I mean, of course I want them to say that, but more than that, I want them to take away something about them being funny or discovering something inside of them or that, you know, you and the person next to you just had really good time within the structure that we devised and we set up. So that's when we feel really good, when everybody in the audience walks out feeling a lot better about themselves.
And so how do you devise games? Do you look at the company and say, oh, wow. You know, I know one of the things that I did with, you know, one of the team building in corporates is that we had a little Facebook page with people, and we would say to people, okay, three things that people don't, you know about me. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, I juggled chainsaws, whatever it is. And what we found going from company to company is that in one company, all these people would be marathon runners. Like, all of these people would have a mark, and they'd hit the mark, but they never went any further. Or all these people were great adventurers. They were whitewater rafters, or they, like, and that they had hired all these adventurers, but they didn't have anybody, like, stable on the ground, like, holding down the fort. And so do you look at a company matrix and say, wow, we can go in and really help these people by doing this? Or do you just go in and say, hey, we're going to see who's there and just open the can of worms and see what comes up, and then really shakes us up.
We're in a really lucky niche in the marketplace because almost I have yet to find the company that says, we're having too much fun. Can you help us tone it down? It just, that company doesn't really exist. And so pretty much 99% of the companies in the marketplace can use our basic introductory program about how to build a company that rewards, recognizes, appreciates better than they're doing, and how to use and channel the fun at work so it can help them be more productive. So that really, you know, if people want to go deeper after that, we have lots of follow-up programs too. But the basic program that people want is usually exactly that. Let's take the first baby steps and move together and, you know, get our joy gang and our fun club started here so that we can start having some weekly or monthly events on our own. And we just need some kickoff to help everybody buy into the concept. You know, what's also great is, people can, I've met so many people over the years who have said to me, you know, I came to one of your lectures and I thought, that's just what I want to do. And rather than saying to me, can you hire me, they start their own practice and they start you know, they develop their own techniques, and the kind of the basic thing is, I want to help people have more joy in their life. So there's lots of people doing this now. There really are. And I go to this annual conference every year called the AIN, the Applied Improv Network, and it's people who are using improvisational theater in the world of business. And people from, I think, 26 countries come to this conference. It's really fantastic. It was just in Berlin this last October, but it's going to be in Austin, Texas next year. And people come to share their best practices with each other. It's fantastic.
I would love to attend that. I mean, that just sounds like such a magical experience. Please let me know. That would be right up your alley. Absolutely. I would love to be at something like that. It's such an amazing concept. It really is. And when you look at Christmas, like, it's the holiday season, and there's magic everywhere. And you're listening to the bells, you're listening to the music, you're listening to children's laughter. Every day is a gift. It's like, what are you unwrapping next? And that's what I feel like. It's like, what are you unwrapping? And so for all of you CEOs and CIOs and, you know, people that are listening to this, and it's a new year, and you're saying, okay, fiscally, responsibly, as a business owner, what can I do to make a difference? What can I do to grow my business? What can I do to assist my employees in being able to really give, you know, 1,000%, 2,000% more than they're giving now, and actually be able to, in a creative way, produce results we never even thought about?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, hiring places, I really do. I mean, I don't think that there's a single company out there that can go in and make the difference that you're making. So I just for the work that you're doing.
Do we have time for me to tell you a Christmas story?
Oh, yes, I would love a Christmas story.
So I was working with, I actually met for the first time, Dr. Jeff Alexander, who is a dental entrepreneur. He owns a string of dental offices up and down the West Coast of the United States. And when I first met him, though, he only had one in Oakland, California. But he was already doing so well that one month he figured he could give a $200 bonus to each of his people. But as he later said to me, okay, suppose I give him a check for $200. I put an extra $200 on the paycheck. They go home. They go, hey, this is kind of cool. They start paying a couple of bills. They send the money into the bank. They come into work the next day. Nothing is any different. So he did a very radical thing. He closed down his entire operation for a couple of hours, took all his people to the shopping mall, gathered them in a big semicircle around him, and walked around and gave them each an envelope containing $200 in cash. And this is what he said to them. He said to them, this is not your money. He said, this is my money. I own this company. But he said, anything you can buy using this money in the next hour is yours to keep. He said, I got a couple of rules. You have to buy at least four different things. They all have to be for you personally, and any money unspent after an hour is coming right back to me. Go get them. Well, he said it was like a madhouse. There's people running around, throwing things up in the air, screaming out about bargains to each other. In fact, the people working behind the cash registers were saying to his people, what company do you work for? I got to quit my job, start working for your company. Then after an hour, he gathered everybody in this food court and treated them to lunch. And they had a kind of show and tell where people got up and showed off the stuff they had bought. Well, a crowd started forming to watch this show and tell. First, there was like 10 people and 50 people and 100 people. And the first guy got up, was really excited about these power tools he had bought, and he was showing them off, and there was kind of bored applause from the people watching. And fortunately for Dr. Jeff, the next woman up had spent all her money at Victoria's Secret. So she like flashes this negligee, and people in the audience are going nuts. They're yelling, they're screaming, they're carrying on. This gives Dr. Jeff an idea. He goes in the audience and starts handing out his business card and starts working the crowd. He told me he got 5 walk-in customers the very next week from total strangers at the mall who said to him, this is the kind of company I want to give my money to. Because people like to do business with people who like to do business. And, you know, if your people are excited about coming to work and feeling like the organization is taking care of them, it's like a magnet to draw business into you. Now, I published that story in one of my books. I think it was in Managing to Have Fun. And so many people started, for their Christmas party, taking them to the shopping mall and giving him money like that and recreating that. In fact, I got a really fantastic letter from a guy in South Africa, a guy named Mike Phillips. And he owns a textile mill there called Migra Textiles. And he did his own version of this. He called it the Magical Mystery Tour. And because his is quite a big operation, he actually had buses to carry all his factory workers to the shopping mall. And he gave them, you know, the equivalent in South African currency. And he sent me a photo of one of his custodial employees. She had taken the money and started buying all these presents for her children. And the other employees, her friends, made her put all that stuff back and forced her against her will for the first time in her life to buy a luxury item for herself, a leather jacket. And he sent me a photo of her in her leather jacket. And in the middle of all this kind of madness, the union shop steward came up to him and said to him, if you're going to start treating us like this, we're going to have to start looking at you a little bit differently. He told me 3 months later there was a general strike of all the textile mills in South Africa, and only one did not go out on strike, his. And he totally attributes it to the change in attitude between management and union from that one simple playful gesture that they had just built on it from then. So they just had a very different level of trust. So can this play and fun impact your organization? In a huge way it can, in an absolute huge way it can. Because you have to, especially as a manager, you have to go out and demonstrate that you're going to be part of it.
That's so special. That really is so special. I mean, it's so funny when you said dental entrepreneur. I mean, just I've never even heard those words put together. And I love that, first of all, it's a great beginning of a story to begin with.
Yeah.
And then when you tell the story and the visual image of him gathering people around him and saying, okay, and that these items have to be for you. Because I think a lot of times when people do get Christmas bonuses, they have their kids or their spouses or their mates, and that one little bit of money they're going to use to give away to get something for someone else, but they don't ever think about themselves.
Right.
There's something I might need or I might want. So the fact that you're focused on it has to be something for you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how special is that? It's brilliant. It's such a brilliant idea.
I love
the idea of the food court and everybody showing and telling. And it's, you know, going the woman with her lingerie. I mean, it's just like a scene out of a movie. It's such a great scene to begin with.
Yeah. So. Well, you know what? They actually did kind of do I was in Australia once and working with a company that did this, and they did get the local news station out. And when they filmed it, they had everybody running around in high speed, you know, running through the stores, gathering the stuff. So they did make a very visual portrait out of it. That was really fun to see.
Oh, I love it. That's hysterical. That's fun. That's just so much fun. How brilliant. And, you know, and when I think about your own life, and we're talking about Playfair, and we're talking about the way that you created fun, and I would love for you to share, you know, I don't know, your lawnman story, if you don't mind, only because I just remember that, or a story from your own life where you have taken fun to the edge.
I'm happy to tell that one.
Because I think that the fact that not only have you been able to create play and fun, and not only do you take play and fun into these companies and change people's lives and bring people together, but that you're able to do it in your own life, in your own neighborhood, in your own community, and that some people can teach and some people can tell and some people can do, but you really walk your talk. You really live play and joy in your own life. And I think that that's what makes you, Matt, such an incredible person to be around, because the joy just exudes from you. There is just this light, this energy, this brilliance, and the way that you live your life, the way that you share your life, and the way that you have so much fun in your day-to-day living really makes us say, yes, that's the guy I want to bring into my company, into my work, because he knows how to do this, because just look at him.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I'm happy to tell that story. And, you know, one of the things is I'm so able to surround myself with people who themselves love to play and bring joy. I think, because one of the kind of featured players in the story I'm about to tell is a guy I've mentioned before, Luke Barber, my co-writer, and Luke just gets me into a lot of trouble because he's so irrepressible himself and just so ready to say yes to every possibility for play. That's why for me, too, every July, or actually we've moved it now because to the very beginning of August, our entire staff gets together, and we go away for 4 days, usually to a ranch up in Northern California, although last year we actually went on a cruise together. And that time is a time of regeneration and thinking of new ideas for us, but it's also such an amazing, amazing chance to play together. And I remember saying to my own staff 1 year, I don't know if the purpose of this retreat is to fine-tune our organization and to give us a kind of model of what it means to be part of a supportive community and make our own organization work so well that we can go out in the marketplace and prosper and make a lot of money, or if the purpose of this organization is to go out in the marketplace and do good and make a lot of money so we can afford to go away for 4 days together and just have this amazing, amazing time together, because they feed each other. The more kind of joy there is or that we can take from working together, the more successful we're going to be in the marketplace. But anyway, let me tell you the story you asked about.
Yeah, no, I love that. Where do you go for those 4 days? I know everybody's already booking their tickets. They're going to come.
You know, we do have, I do have friends saying to me, is there any way I can come along and, you know, let me do a free session for you guys? I just want to be a fly on the wall for the things that you do. And, I mean, it is so much fun. I remember 1 year a friend of mine was getting married, and I had to leave our staff retreat on the very last day. I had to leave at 6 in the morning and drive to, you know, to make it to my friend's wedding. And it was the last day, and, you know, we were going to end right after breakfast anyway. And so I was giving one of our first-time people a lift to the airport because he was also catching a very early plane. And so I went and, you know, picked him up at 6 o'clock, and then we got in the car, and I said to him, well, you look a little tired. When did you get to bed? And he said, oh, probably about 4 in the morning. I said, 4 in the morning? Really? What were you doing? He said, well, we were up playing this game called Werewolf, this game that we like to play as a group. I said, oh, really? You're playing Werewolf till 4 in the morning? Well, who was there? And he said, well, pretty much everybody but you, actually.
Oh, no.
So,
that's funny.
This is a group that really likes, you know, likes to take it to the limits and really loves to play together. And so, yeah, I think it's a really, really important part of our success and why people are just willing to go the extra mile for each other. Yeah. All right, but I will tell you the story that you asked for. So, Luke and I do most of our collaboration over the internet because I live in California and he lives in Texas, but at least once during the course of pretty much every book that we do together, we meet in person and we do, you know, we do rewriting, we do editing, we brainstorm. So this happened during the writing of our book, Work Like Your Dog, and this time Luke had come to visit me in California. And one of the premises of this book is you can't just keep working and working and working or you're going to burn yourself out. You have to give yourself systematic play breaks so you can nourish and re-energize and regenerate yourself. So we really would practice that all the time. And Luke happens to be, although he lives in the city of Dallas, he happens to be part of this really great community that does communal gardens. In other words, there's this big plot of land that everybody shares. and he's taken me through his garden many times. So I was starting a garden, and I wanted some of Luke's help with it. So we would take breaks pretty often during working together to go out and work in the garden. And we had just come back from working in the garden when the phone was ringing. And I was expecting a phone call from Janine, my wife. And so I said to Luke, pick up the phone and tell Janine I'll be right in there. Let me just take a few minutes to put away all the tools. So about 20 seconds later, I would say, Luke is back at the back door, and he's saying, stop that. You got to come in right now and pick up the other line. So I go and I pick up the other phone extension, and almost immediately I know it's a wrong number, because Luke is saying to this woman on the other end, he says, okay, my partner's back now. Would you ask him the question that you asked me? And the woman says, well, okay, I asked you, is this the man who does yards? We had just come in from doing our own yard, and, you know, one of these principles of the book was say yes to every opportunity to have fun. Plus, Luke has this big grin on his face, and he's giving me the thumbs up. So it's pretty clear what the answer has to be. And I say, well, yes, this is the man who does yards. And she says, oh, I'm so glad to have found you. She says, you know, I lost touch with my yard man from last year. And my friend told me you did a fantastic job with her yard, and I just want to know, how much would you charge me to do my yard? And there's like complete dead silence on our end of the phone because we have no idea what to say. And then Luke has this inspiration. He says, remind me. He says, what did we charge your friend? And she says, well, you know, you charge her $35 and my yard's about the same size. And Luke says, $35? Yeah, that sounds about right. She says, oh, that would be great. She says, but tell me, could you possibly fit me into your busy schedule? And I say, okay, that depends on one thing and one thing alone. Where exactly do you live? So it turns out she lives like four blocks from my house. So I say, yes, I believe we can fit you into our schedule. She says, oh, that's fantastic. When can you come over? I say, when can we come over? We'll be there in like 15 minutes. She says, 15 minutes? Talk about customer service. This is just unbelievable. So, you know, we don't know what we're doing. We pop open the trunk of my car. We lift the lawnmower in there. We put a couple of rakes in there, a couple of little clippy things, and I'm driving really carefully so nothing will fall out. But, and it's only four blocks away, so no big deal. So we get there. Turns out this woman is a really nice woman, works for American Airlines. She shows us around. It's really no big deal, especially for two of us. We mow the lawn, we rake it up, we clip the hedges a little bit. She gives us $35. We're all feeling pretty good. Next morning, the phone rings. It's her again. She says, we did such a good job. Can we take her on as a regular customer for the rest of the summer? Well, it takes Luke about 2 seconds before he says, absolutely, you are on a list. Consider yourself one of our regular customers. Of course, he's flying back to Dallas the next day. It is no big deal for him to be making this agreement, but I figure, look, we went this far with the thing. We might as well take it the rest of the way, so it's fine with me. So, and it really is no big deal because pretty much what I do is whenever it's time to mow my lawn, I just schedule her for the same time.
That's funny.
Towards the end of the summer, my next-door neighbor, Bob, who is the president of the local bank, he's having a kind of fundraising affair for one of the guys in the bank who's running for city council. And I get a little dressed up. I put on a sport coat. I go over there. A lot of my friends are there. I'm having a couple of drinks. I'm having a really good time. Who should I spot across the living room but my one and only customers? So very kind of suavely, I make my way over to her, and she's having a drink, too. And we have a nice conversation. We talk about the weather, what a fun party. Not once do we say anything about her yard. The next morning, I'm getting ready to go for a run, and I'm stretching against a tree, and Bob comes running out of his house. I say, Bob, thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me to that party. I had such a good time. He says, forget that, he says. I had a very strange conversation about you with one of my guests. I said, what? He says, well, one of the women from the neighborhood comes over to me, and she points in your direction. She says, Bob, can you tell me what he's doing here? And I say, why? What's wrong? Why shouldn't he be here? She says, why shouldn't he be here? That man is my yard man. Bob says, look, there must be some mistake here. I know that man very well. She says, I'm telling you, that man is my yard man. Bob says, look, I've known that guy for more than 10 years. That guy is my next-door neighbor. There's no way, she says to him, that man owns the house next door? understand how a yard man could afford a house like that. Bob says, look, I don't know what's going on here, but I do know one thing for certain. That man is not your yard man. 2 weeks later, it's time for my regular appointment. I haven't even gotten out of the car before she is all over me. She says, excuse me, she says, Bob tells me you're a management consultant. And I say, well, yes, that's very true. She says, well, he tells me you're a very successful management consultant. And I say, oh, isn't that sweet of him to be saying things like that about me? And she says, well, I don't understand. Why should a successful management consultant have to have a second job as a yard man? Well, I pointed out to her, when she first called me up, she did not ask me if I was a yard man. She asked me, was I the man who does yards? Which I most certainly was. First, it was just mine, but now it was both mine and hers. Well, she took like a little step back, like she couldn't believe what she was hearing, and then she totally lost it. She was laughing, like tears were coming from her eyes. She was bent over double. I was laughing along with her. And then I mowed her lawn, and she gave me $35, and I went home and called and got a phone. So.
Oh, my gosh. That is the greatest story ever. That is the single most extraordinary. I mean, that is the funniest. And just the fact that you said yes, and that you continued it through the summer.
Well, you know, all you got to do is learn to say yes, and things like that kind of turn up all the time. They take on a life of their own.
And did you ever tell Bob the story? Did you tell him? I think that's hysterical. Oh, my gosh. What was his reaction? Was he hysterical as well?
No, I don't think Bob ever actually did figure out the whole thing there. So
that is funny. So funny, Matt.
It is funny.
I mean, I love the fact that you live on the edge. I love the fact that you say yes, that you just leap, that you just jump, that you just do it all. And then, you know, and I want to make sure, you know, as our time is coming to a close, that we always ask the guests for a definition and of what they do. And so what would you say play is to you?
What do I say that it is that we do?
Play. What does the word play mean to you?
Oh, the word play. You know, it's only recently that I've made this equation between play and love. And I just think play is one of the fastest paths to our heart. And that's the biggest byproduct of relearning to play as adults, that we bring more joy, we bring more celebration, we bring more laughter, but most importantly, we bring more love into our lives. And, you know, who wouldn't want that? I have yet to meet that person.
I love that. What a beautiful definition. That's great. And then tell me again how people can, you know, find you, the company, how you can come in and work with their companies to have team building and community and vision and fun and all of that, and especially, you know, for the school programs, what's the best website, what's the best ways to find you, your books, your products, everything.
Yeah, well, the easiest way is playfair.com, PLAYFAIR. But if people want to see some videos, too, there's even more videos at mattweinsteinteam.com, MATTWEINSTEIN. And, you know, the videos themselves are fun to watch, so just take a look at them.
Oh, I think that's great. And then do you have any advice for people that say that they don't have time to have fun in their lives, that they've got to get all this done and they've got to stay focused?
Lots of people say that. Lots of, you know, even in the middle of one of our experiential programs, what I always say to people, and one of the things I ask people to do is brainstorm, okay, what's one fun thing that you can do at work in the next 2 weeks? You know, even if it's a simple thing like you bring a bouquet of flowers and then you give it to somebody and say, here, this is yours for the next half hour, then you pass it on to somebody else and tell them why they should have it. You know, or I worked with a company recently that I love this thing. They made up ABCD certificates that they started handing out, meaning someone who went above and beyond the call of duty. It doesn't need to be a big thing. It can be a little thing. But what I say to them is, look, even if you brainstorm something here that's a really great idea, you're going to go back to work after taking a day or two off to come to this meeting, and you're going to be just flooded with demands on your time. You have to make this a priority like anything else, or it'll never get done. It'll get swamped in the, quote, serious work. But this is serious, too. In fact, for many people, this is the most serious work they can do.
It's just brilliant. Just the idea of fun and the idea of what you do. And truly, I think it's magical. It's marvelous. You know, and as I've been sharing throughout the show, and as, you know, and I will even send you tapes from some of the past few weeks as we've been talking about you and your work, but there is not a company out there that's doing what you're doing the way that you're doing it, and at the speed in which you're doing it, and at the opening of which you're able to open people's hearts, their minds, their visions, their dreams, and bring people together. And I just, you know, for those of you listening, I so highly recommend Wayfair and for people to find you, Matt, because your work is just, it's the best that there is. And that's really what we're trying to do on this show as we talk about having an unlimited life and really being able to break boundaries, break borders, break barriers, knock through walls, get through the other side. And what are those tools? What are those techniques? What are those ways to really live the kind of life you know you were meant to live, grow your business the way you know your business should be growing, have those kind of, you know, financialize all of that, and what is the way to get there? And this really is the way to get there. I mean, through joy, through laughter, through fun, through play. And like you said, when they set up forums and arenas, and I mean, one of the things that I will always remember, you know, as we were speaking of, is that games that I've known my whole life, since I was 2 or 3 years old, that to me were only games until they were played with you. And then they became life experiences that I've shared, you know, with people, you know, through years now. And it's touched me in such a profound way, the work that you do and the people that I know that are in business that have worked with you, then their lives and their businesses have changed so drastically, so dramatically, and on such an upswing. And it's something that really, it's like you're a launching pad for everything that people are looking for. And it's right there in front of them. And if, you know, if you've been looking, if you've been searching, Playfair really is the place to go, and it really is the answer and the most fun. And like I said, your book, I can't imagine a better Christmas present. And, you know, truly. And once I'm in full voice again, I will say it even louder. But it is special today, especially today for me. You know, I am here in New York, and I am here down at Ground Zero. And I'm literally, you know, looking outside the window of where I'm at right now. And so I'm sure my voice, so much emotion came up for me being here today. And then, but I think about the joy, and I think about the laughter, and I think about the children, and I think about that all we have as a nation and as a community, and really, like you're saying, how love is connected to play, and play is connected to love, and we're all connected to one another. And I think that's the thing when you talk about, you know, the games of life, and then the way that we share, and the way that we experience, and how we share our experiences. And if we can, like you're saying, share an experience a whole different way, instead of handing an employee $200, but saying, here, you have an hour to pick 4 things that are for you, and then come back and share them and make this an experience. And that all of these dots are connected in such an incredible way. When I think of you, I always think like a kite, that you're up there soaring through the sky and people are running with you. And it's just, you know, taking off what Playfair does is it allows a company, a business, a person, a relationship to take off. And so I so appreciate you taking your time today and sharing with us your magic and your marvel and your experiences, and certainly, you know, all that you have inside of you and all that you share just so generously all the time with so many people everywhere. So you really are such a gift.
Thanks so much, Nicole. It's always such a joy to make contact with you. I really look forward to that time.
Well, thank you, and we look forward to having you also on our Hourglass Bride show. And I know we have many listeners that jump, you know, back and forth, and so it will be very exciting as we talk about really having play in relationships. But today, as we talk about play is being part of an unlimited life. I really think it's the cherry on the sundae for the way that we live. So thank you so much.
Great. Okay, be well.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for being with us today. What a special guest. Honestly, for months and months of we've been talking about Matt Weinstein and Playfair, and I really believe in my heart of hearts that that's the way to go. If you are a CEO, if you're a CIO, if you're the head of a company, having that kind of joy, having that effervescence, having that enthusiasm, having that door, that window, that opening for a company to be able to have team building, shared vision, mutual joy, and a way to step over and cross over lines is never experienced before. That's really such a brilliant idea. So if you're looking for something for your company for the new year, you're really looking to launch your finances, launch your business, launch everything about being able to pull together in unity a company to move forward into the future, I would so highly recommend Matt Weinstein and Playfair. It's just one of the most brilliant companies out there, and as you've heard from the bio, you know, certainly one of the most noted throughout the nation, and you can absolutely tell he's just really a genius at what he does. His wisdom is just the pinnacle of success in the play arena, and he's just wonderful. So I feel so honored and so grateful that he took time to be with us today. We have incredible shows coming out for you. We have an amazing, amazing photographer who actually took the Mary statue, and she would take the Mary statue and move her everywhere internationally. And so the energy was placed in all of these different places. And then by these photographs, he would have people in all these small villages and small towns that were so pulled to the energy of what that represented, just to have that energy just deep-seated in where they are. And now his photography is now an international success, but it's not his success that he's noting. It's just the energy of spirit, the energy of light. And so he is coming on to really share with us some Christmas energy and how just moving energy to your own photographs in your own life with your own family, if you're taking family photographs, how you can literally change by bringing spirit into you, around you, and really have that in your world. So that's going to be such a special show. And, of course, our junior is going to come on. He's going to be talking to us about deeper love, which we're really looking forward to. And then, of course, we have the most amazing lineup of shows on Hourglass Bride. So make sure you join us for that. Today I am in New York. I am down at Ground Zero. I am here for an investiture ceremony. As many of you know, I was knighted September 28th, and there is a ceremony here tomorrow in which I am in the procession. I'm very honored and blessed to be part of that. So it's a special weekend, and I'm so grateful that on a very special and very sacred weekend that we had Matt Weinstein teaching us absolutely everything about play and really take it to heart in your own life, how to have fun, be the laundryman, say yes to every experience, always say yes to play, always say yes to having fun, to having joy, to having yourself step into that kind of life you always wanted to have. Always choose play. Always choose a yes. And always, always, always take the time to laugh and to love and to de-stress. So this is Nicole Brandon with Unlimited Life. Many, many, many thanks to Matt Weinstein from Playfair. Wishing you all a wonderful week. And I will speak to you next week in Los Angeles. Thank you again.